I call the February 16th, 2018 Finance Committee of the Whole Meeting of the Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
7 o'clock. Member Bourne?
I didn't turn it on, sorry.
I'm like, was she abstaining from the roll call?
Yes.
Member Brooks?
Yes.
Member Gaines?
Yes, here.
Member Undrunk?
Here.
Chair Ludden?
Yes.
Right.
Okay, now it's our time for matters from the public. It's our practice not to address questions at this time, but we will take input under advisement. Does anybody have any comments? Okay. No matters from the public. All right. Am I supposed to do this, or do you want to status staff?
Well, I can do this, or whichever. Okay. Tonight we had the yearly presentation from GYS and GJHB regarding their activities for the year and their stipend requests. So can we start first with GYS and SNAP's Executive Director, Margaret Ann Powell?
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
I usually mess it up. Come on up. I know it's a kind of a weird configuration because we're in committee, so if you want to like stand right in the middle there, that would be excellent.
Hi everyone, I'm Margaret Ann Howe, GYS Executive Director. I have been here all of 1 month, so please go easy on me. I previously worked at GYS a few years ago as the Associate Director, so I am familiar with the Village of Glencoe and familiar with the North Shore area, as well as GYS and the population that we serve. This is Jamie Frazen, and she is the SNAP director, so she's in charge of that whole program. We're separate but together, and yeah, she's been the director for 5 months, about 5 months now, but has worked with SNAP for 2 to 2.5 years, something like that, and has a long history with working with adults with special needs.
Excellent.
Yeah, and this is our lovely board member.
I'm Alex Kaplan. I sit on the board. I've been on the board of GYS and SNAP for a little over a year and a few months.
Excellent.
And
thank you.
This is co-counsel.
A future member, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Welcome.
Okay, do you just want to give us a brief overview of what you've done? We have everybody, all the board members have their reports in their packet. If you just like to give us a little brief overview.
Sure. So within the past year, we had 275 young people served at Glencoe Youth Services. Our projection for this coming fiscal year is about 300, maybe a little bit more. Our focus is 6th through 12th graders. We do see a lot of our central school kids coming over. We're, as you know, we're located right behind Central School. We provide after school drop-in hours for Central School, and we're looking at expanding our drop-in hours during the evenings on the weekends, specifically just for high school aged youth.
That's a good
idea. Starting with movie nights is something that we're trying out this month. We're kind of slowly introducing new programming to GYS and kind of dipping our toe in, see how it goes, see what kids come to, see what kids don't come to. Especially the high school age youth population is a little bit difficult to engage. They have a lot of extracurricular activities and stuff like that. But being available evenings and weekends is helpful for kids who have those kind of schedules. So we're looking at expanding our hours, like I said, Friday nights, Saturday nights as well, doing movies. During the week too, we are starting to, I have a calendar for this month of programs, so you can pass that around. So we're starting to do, we would like to have programming every single day of the week, at least something going on. If you want to come in and play video games, that's cool. If you want to come in, do a craft, do whatever we have planned for that day, that's cool too. So we're trying to do, we're obviously continuing to do drop-in, but also going to really ramp up our programming and get some more kids in and have a little bit more structure.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions?
I would like to add something real quick.
Please.
Not to take anything away from Jimmy or Mary Ann, but ever since these two ladies just recently took over, we've seen a tangible change in the direction that GOAS and SNAP is going. Sometimes some of the changes are simple and elementary, like sending out constructive emails that inform not only the board members, but some of the participants as to what's going on and how it's happening. Just by way of example, that schedule is something that I don't think we would have had a year before. And I think what we're going to see in this next fiscal year is that GOAS and SNAP making a greater splash, not only in the Glencoe community, but beyond that as well, especially with these two at the helm.
Excellent. That's great.
We're also looking to expand into, I'm a licensed clinical social worker, so I'm able to provide supervision to bachelor's or master's level clinical counseling students as well as social work students. So we're looking to expand our volunteer / internship kind of range, so we will be looking at having clinical interns come aboard and help out around the center as well.
Really like your earned concession money for doing houseworker cleaning. Really like that one.
It's really very difficult to keep clean with all of our snacks and young kids. So
that's a great idea. That's
it's
awesome.
Nice to have the kids help out with us.
Good.
I remember being in the building quite a bit when you were first working there, and you made a marked difference in the level of organization and the level of cleanliness. So I'm sure the board members and your attendees are thrilled that you're back.
The past month I've done a significant amount of organizing and stuff like that.
We've seen over the last two, 3 months with these two working together, the whole atmosphere has changed. There's a degree of electricity when you walk into a GYS or a SNAP meeting. I've got my 8-year-old she marks every Tuesday. You know, we're going to SNAP, and it's that type of environment that I think is going to make a big difference in what we've seen SNAP in the past. Not that there was anything bad with it. I think that these two have really spearheaded and making it a lot better.
Excellent.
Thank you for coming.
Question that I have.
Yes, please.
As you expand your services, are you going to need some additional funding?
So yes. Absolutely, yes.
So what fundraising are you going to do?
I found it works.
Well, we're revamping a lot of things, and those areas are things that we will be revamping as well. We're looking over the next year or two to start doing several more fundraisers, as well as branching out to maybe get several other grants as well. Not necessarily long-term grants, like what the Village and the Park District provide for us, but at least some extra money to fund some, we just hired another youth worker, so we do have hourly, people who are hourly employees at our organization that we need to keep going as well. So, yeah, we have several really fun fundraisers planned for the next year.
Historically, if I recall, we did some fundraisers by ourselves. I remember we did a fundraiser with the women's, not the Library, but the Wright Writers Theater. Is that what they were called? Did it at the Writers Theater. Was that?
No, that's
the Women's
the
Club.
Women's
we did
it
at the Writers Theater.
Yeah.
So I think if we keep going in that direction and utilizing what Glencoe has to offer, have a bigger presence and be able to work with other Glencoe organizations to help us offset the cost of running this organization.
Yeah.
Great.
Quick question, Josh?
Please.
Because I see, just from what you were talking about, there are several organizations listed here in the income category that are not donors but may have been donors in the past. Because I'm thinking if you have a board, those would be the entities that you would reach out to, banks, churches, religious organizations, family foundations, I suppose that too. But that sort of thing would be certainly a source of revenue or donations.
Yeah, and they usually donate through our, I believe twice a year we do our mailers, our donation mailers.
Okay.
And those organizations usually donate through our mailers, especially our donor level, donor letter that goes out to our previous donors. People who have donated in the past tend to donate again the next year.
Right.
And one of the other things that one of my co-board directors and I are doing is we're actually making a list of all of the retail operations in Glencoe and surrounding areas, and we're actually going to go to them like banks and sit down and see what process we have to go through to actually get the support. The problem with that is that some of them say no, some of them say yes, we'll be glad to, and we get $100. We're thankful for it, but it's not anywhere near as much as we anticipated getting from a large institution. So it becomes unpredictable as to how much we're going to be able to get from the independent community, or get independently from the community. But you're absolutely right. We have spearheaded that and taken the initiative to go to those communities, go to those organizations.
And just so you know, like on my end for the special needs program, we give them dinner every Tuesday night. So I've been going to the churches, I've been going to businesses locally, and they've been donating dinner. They've been coming in on Tuesday nights and bringing them.
So in-kind donations wouldn't be here, but there's also, that would be for
that's for the snack program,
Just for my part of it,
I understand. There's maybe local builders that they certainly could be a resource as well.
They should be.
Thinking around the same thing.
I see for the SNAP program that the majority of the participants are from Evanston, Wilmette, and Unknown. Are you getting funding from them too?
I'd like to speak to that if I could.
Sure.
If you don't mind for a second. The SNAP program used to be called our Special Needs Adult Program.
Yep.
And we had gone through a few different names. The common bond that you have amongst the special needs adult population is that they almost universally graduated from New Trier, and many of them were Glenconians or lived right nearby here. The problem is that now they're of an age where many of them are in group homes, not necessarily living with their parents, and we don't have a group home for this population in Glencoe. So they're typically in Evanston, sometimes in Waukegan or Gurnee. But their rallying cry, their focus is back where they all grew up and first met in this area. And so that's one of the reasons that you don't see that address. If you look a little further into it, you'll see that their parents are still residents within the township, if not within Glencoe specifically. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Good work you're continuing to do.
No, this is
thank you. Thank you.
Okay, next I'd like to invite up GGHB Executive Director Audra Donnelly, and co-president is Deborah Brower and Jennifer Medelman. I just told you. Three names.
So I'm Audra Donnelly. I'm the executive director of the Glencoe Junior High Project. This is my third year with GGHP.
I'm Jennifer Medelman, and I am co-president of GGHP. This is my second year on the board and first year as co-president. It's a two-year commitment as co-president, so I want to
hear. Saying that this is my second year. I'm Deborah Barr. This is my third year on board in my first year in Glencoe.
So, Glencoe Junior High Project has four areas, as I'm sure most of you are aware. The Oasis, which is our drop-in center located in Central. We're open every school day. The kids come in during their lunch recess periods. New this year, we've been working with Dr. Mullett and Kim kind of to get the Oasis up and better utilized. So we actually have, for each grade now, a little group of kids that come and eat lunch with us. We have different discussion topics and things like that. We haven't opened it up to fifth graders yet, but our sixth, seventh, and eighth graders not only come in for recess, but also eat lunch with myself and our other youth director almost every day. Then we have our performing arts program. We just had our play 2 weekends ago, Thoroughly Modern Millie.
It was a great show. I had the honor of being a guest star in it one of the nights. It was very nerve-wracking. But the kids did awesome. And then we have our civic engagement program, which is like an extended community service program. We take the kids to 5 various locations. If it's a soup kitchen in the city or a senior center in Deerfield, we go to a lot of different organizations that expose the kids to different cultures and things that they might not experience right here in Glencoe. And we sit with them and talk about, you know, what is homelessness? Why are people homeless? Things like that that they don't get in the normal school day. And then last is our social activities and events. We do various dances for the whole school throughout the year. You guys are probably familiar with Beach Bash. We have it every year at the beach. Some new events that we've had or that have been really successful is Teen Skate Night. As I'm sure you guys are aware, the first one had over 100 kids. And last Friday night, we had between 80 and 90 kids, and it was freezing. We were expecting not that many to show up. So I've been working with the Park District, and we have pizza and s'mores and hot cocoa, and it's been a great event. The kids actually asked me, can we have a third one? Can there be another one this year? So we'll see. And then lastly, we had the honor of being not a sponsor, but involved with the Mud Run this year. We had 20 out of our 23 board members volunteering day of. So it was a great event for us to come and show our support. And yeah, all of our board members were like stationed at all the obstacles, and they had a really great time. So yeah, that's kind of GGHP right now.
I have to say, we do have a wonderful working relationship. We do a lot of joint special events and programming with GJHP, and really helps us meet the demographic also. So thank you for working so well with Liz and Bobby and our team. So, any questions?
No, thank you. Great program.
Thanks for everything you do and for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. That's painless,
wasn't
it?
Thank you for your support. Yeah. Hope to continue to work with you.
Just, you know, we take action at our board meeting, but you don't have to go to that meeting, just to give you a FYI on that one, okay?
Thank you.
So it looks like we're moving on to a discussion of staffing analysis.
Yes, thank you. Now we get into it. Yes. Okay, discussion of parks staffing analysis. So probably over the last 4 years, ever since I got here really, we've really been taking a good look at Parks Department. And I remember the first analysis we did, I think it was Barbara Heller when we were doing the master plan, identified that we had a staffing issue in the Parks Department. And so we really looked at it, and we used a combination of staff and contractual. So with Chris being here, how long, 2 years?
3 years in May.
3 years in May. We really had a good chance to really evaluate it and do it. And so what we've discovered is that we used Flex, correct?
Correct.
The last couple of years for both contractual mowing and contractual landscaping, you say. We found that the contractual landscaping was very inefficient and not meeting the standards of the park district, just because for a number of reasons. And I don't know if, Chris, you want to expound upon those reasons.
So the biggest difference between the contractual mowing and the contractual landscaping is the mowing, the contractors get paid per mow. So they go to a park parcel, they get paid a flat fee, whether it takes them 6 hours to mow that parcel or 6 minutes. So the way the labor works typically is we pay an hourly rate. So we go out to legal bid, we agree to a certain amount with the contractor, and then we are provided staff members at an hourly rate. So the challenge with that is we are effectively incorporating contractual staff into our staff. They're not accountable to us. They're not efficient in the way that we do our work. I mean, every single day can be new employee orientation. I often joke that our horticulturist, Tom, is the best trainer that Flex has on their staff. So even something as basic as where Lakefront Park is, where Cock Park is, these are the types of conversations that we routinely have.
What's a weed?
What's
a flower?
What's a plant? I mean, you know, some of this stuff is simple when you've been doing it a really long time, but when you are constantly churning through contractual staff that may have never actually worked as a landscaper prior to that day on your job. There's a lot of challenges to that. So we really started looking at the difference between what we can offer with our team and what those contractors can offer. And of course, on our side, we are detail-oriented. Our staff are accountable for their time, where the only real accountability we had with a contractor was calling them at the end of the day and saying, you know, don't send Timmy again. We don't want to see him again. That was really the only oversight that we had over that staff. So that's part of the challenge here. Where the mowing is a little bit lower skill, lower impact in the sense that it can be handled by a general landscaper without a lot of high degree of training, where the labor was really where we were challenged in the sense that we just weren't getting really the bang for our buck in what we were actually expending to get that done.
Exactly. And Chris explained, it's per mow. So if they send out the wrong equipment and they're mowing and it takes them 5 hours, we're still paying them for that mow. So they're incentivized to do that correctly.
Like paying them piece rate instead of hourly.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
And it's kind of black and white. Like you either mowed it or you didn't.
Exactly.
Correct. There's 97 different plants
exactly.
You have to know.
Correct. Which I think that's. We're looking to be able to train staff to know the 97 plants versus. You know, that's a weed, you're pulling an oak tree out.
Yeah.
Those kind of challenges.
So what would happen is we have Tom, who's very talented, would spend the majority of his day, or probably 20% of his day, every day, either training someone and then checking up to do if they're doing it right, and it was not effective or efficient. So charge Chris to really look at how we could do that better. And so as you probably read over, our plan is we're recommending adding a full-time staff, but it's not totally the expense of a full-time staff, because we'll be taking away some of those contractual hours, putting some of those mowing hours into that, and hiring more for mowers contractually for different areas. So while we contracted before, two laborers will be able to do it in one.
Yes.
That makes sense?
So, it's not an equal hours-to-hour swap. We know that we had two staff before. We're going to have one staff member now. But we feel that we have the work for a year-round staff member, and by retaining this individual, we're gonna see a great amount of efficiency in. We're only gonna have to explain where a park is once or twice versus every single day, which I know that sounds funny, but really that's the reality that we're working in with these contractual
mm-hmm.
laborers.
Right.
Something as fundamental as this is how you use a weed whip. This is a weed. You know, wear your gloves. Stuff that's very simple in the scheme of what we're doing.
So, you have written here. Do you have any questions?
I do. When talking with Dan and a couple of the other longer-time guys, did any of them mention that they were sad to see that Flex couldn't keep up with the quality of the former contractor, which was Manfredini?
I think that they saw the staffing shortfall, and at the time, Flex was really a bridge. I mean, because Manfredini and what they did for the district was more about the fact that we had the same two contractors every single year.
From Manfredini.
Yes.
And those guys knew what they were doing and they cared about
correct.
The community.
And they really functioned as an extension of our staff. But once we went to the legally bid model of having to lawfully abide by the low bid, we unfortunately had to go away from that. So that's really not what we have with Flex. That relationship with Manfredini was unique, kind of.
And that's not worked very well.
That's not something you can recreate.
No.
Due to the
If you look at what we're paying Flex now, the next closest legal bid for labor was almost double the cost. So that it's just not sustainable for what we're trying to accomplish.
And in that case, we'd have more control if we did it internally also.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does the village, because we cut the village grass, right?
Correct.
So do they give us money?
No, it's a shared service agreement, so they do some things for us and we do some things for them.
Okay, so that doesn't help us with that?
No, it does not.
They take care of our fleet maintenance in particular is kind of the one that we trade
for, which
is
one.
A great trade.
And garbage at the
beach.
Yes,
and garbage at the beach, among other things.
So if I read your memo correctly, you're adding some contractual mowing. Does that imply that there's some mowing that's being done by employees now?
Yeah, so right now, that's a good question, Josh. Right now, contractors are mowing about 20% of our inventory. And so some of the out-of-the-way parcels, the not like the lakefront parks or the Kauf parks, we're taking care of the athletic fields. So what I'm proposing is to expand what the contractor is mowing from 20 to 45 acres. So it mainly includes the Vernon Greenway, a few other odds and end parcels here and there, but it still keeps the really high profile park district sites under our mowing umbrella because we typically mow those sites more than once a week to keep them looking the way that they do.
And the athletic fields,
yeah, the
because
athletic
they
fields,
require
we
a certain...
We just can't, it's not typical
you don't
to
want
contract
to,
that out because a problem can become a problem really quickly there. Mm-hmm. So...
In the conclusion, you note a few things. You say that we need it to support the increasing expectations of service. Can I start with asking what, can you just clarify what the increasing expectations of service are?
Well, it's just the constant need for new tasks, new challenges, new events, new program support. It could really be anything. It could be running the beach cleaner 3 times a week instead of 1 time a week. Just things that may not be easily able to be seen. I mean, the upgrades that we've made to our facilities, the changes that we've seen at Watts, the boathouse, the beach, all of those kind of came as an expectation of increased service.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yep. and then we are in the position that new services cannot be added without considering the impact to total quality. Makes sense. What new services might you consider adding?
Well, I think we've talked a lot about future sustainability initiatives, additional mm-hmm. conservation, things that make perfect sense for the park district to be doing, but would come as a new add to our total envelope of what we do.
Okay. And just, I know the answer to this, I'm going to ask it anyway, is because I can well imagine your frustration dealing with this provider of services that would send out, you know, people who are ill-qualified for the job, talking to their management and saying, listen, you've got to do better, that didn't get
you. Know, the margins on residential customers and municipal customers are different.
Yeah.
So every landscaper's truck that you see in town, they're going to send their best crews to the residential customers because that's where they make their money.
Yep.
So you could see our provider and you could see their trucks, and the residents might have a brand new truck and staffing uniforms who know what they're doing and have been doing it for years, where we may have the opposite of that. So once your bid can get really complicated, because when we went out to bid last year, we had a much stronger contract. We were in the position of saying, you're supposed to wear a uniform, you didn't go home today. So we strengthened the contract, and that frustration is there, but there's only so much you're going to get until you pay those residential premiums, which don't really make sense for us and what we're doing.
Right. Thank you.
Other questions?
What is the increment increase? Let's see. So we've got some savings because we will not be contracting,
mm-hmm.
But then we'll be adding, this would be a full-time staff person with
correct.
Benefits and all
correct.
That stuff.
Correct.
So what would that increment be?
The total bottom line increase in costs is we're forecasting is of around $32,000 to the district. Mm-hmm.
With includes the IMRF and all
yeah.
that other
yes, stuff. Everything's included.
The health insurance, whatnot. Is that correct?
Yes.
I suppose it's not an error, but I fell off my chair when I saw that the benefits were mm-hmm. more than the salary
mm-hmm.
itself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's assuming
too.
A family yeah. coverage.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's mm-hmm. the worst case.
Yes.
Worst case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm. Which is
certainly
how,
probable and likely scenario.
Yeah.
Well, I think
yeah.
we find ourselves in a wonderful problem that I'm proud to say is of Chris and Lisa and staff's making, that they've raised the expectations in the community of what the quality condition of our parks can be, and they've raised the bar for what they expect of themselves, and they realize that to keep it going that way, we have to have a bit more consistent control.
Exactly. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
The health
yeah.
benefits are really what makes this position marketable at the price point that we're at. This is how we
yeah.
get staff over a private contractor who may pay a higher hourly rate. We offer that year-round work, and also those health insurance benefits are really what makes this position
education
so
education and things like that. So
and just giving someone a future that they're not going to be, you know, laid off because it rained for 3 days in a row. And those types of things that private contractors typically do.
Just real quickly, would you advise that we look at our affiliate agreements and see if there, if there should be some compensation for the increased costs that we bear to keep these special areas up to snuff?
Yeah, I mean, maybe Lisa, you might
are laborers, so they're not really the ones mowing the field. Our guys are doing that. Our affiliate agreements pay all the direct costs currently.
Okay, so.
Well, we kind of knew going into like the Berlin field that we were going to want to maintain that at a higher standard than we might have maintained Central Field 10 years ago, because the quality and the condition lend itself to be maintained at a higher level. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with having discussions with our affiliates that they're benefiting from this new expertise and new level of service, and there should be some appropriate sharing of that down the road as we continue to have discussions with them longer term.
I can make one note. We are really looking at different affiliates and how the wear and tear on our fields are.
Yeah.
So, for example, football, which actually isn't an affiliate, it's a rental because they don't have enough residents in the football program. We're really going back and looking, okay, we're charging this much rent for the hour, but after the end of the season, it's taking Chris's guys 2 weeks to restore the field back. Is that really what we want to use that field for, or should we use it for baseball instead that doesn't have the wear and tear and the, or if there is that wear and tear, we charge it back. So we're saying, you know, your rental is going to be this, but we also have the wear and tear. In the last 3 years, it took, you know, 3 weeks to restore and this much material. So on top of that rental fee, you'll have to pay this surcharge.
Right.
So we are actually, we just talked about that the other day, and because we haven't rented out those fields to football yet, and we're going to have that discussion. Like, hey, listen, you have to pay for this repair because it's not fair for the taxpayers to do, since there's such a small amount of residents in the league.
Right, and it used to be they used to play at Central.
Correct.
Yes.
Central was a soccer field that was taken care of by AYSO, and then football came in and
traffic,
did the football thing, and that always seemed, I mean, I just rode my bike by and thought, how unfair that whole thing seems. So I'm really happy to hear that.
Yeah. So look, and so I'm sure maybe you'll hear it at the board level, because we will be having a discussion, because we really believe that there's wear and tear on things that those organizations have to pay back.
Sure.
And we'll look at that for soccer. We'll look at that for everything that we do, is what kind of repairs or enhanced maintenance do we have to do on those fields.
Well, and, you know, in the last 2 years, our affiliate agreements have really morphed into a far more accurate picture of what we're actually doing. And, you know, they've kind of gone away from what they were originally, and there, I think right now there's quite a bit of equal partnership in how things are being billed and what's the taxpayers are appropriately on the hook for versus the affiliates. So those agreements are pretty up to date as far as the costs go and what we're charging them and the reasonable expectations that we have over what the field should look like versus where we've been.
Exactly.
I have two questions and a comment. Question number one, in your table, the reduction of 43,847.
Yes.
Is that, does that represent the mowing labor that's currently our staff that you're going to outsource?
No, that represents eliminating the contractual horticulture contract in its entirety.
Okay.
So there's a $43,000 proposed addition of 25 acres, and then there's a $43,000 elimination of the contractual, that's the difference between the contractual budget.
So you basically reduce the horticultural budget by the same amount that you're increasing?
Well, no, I reduced the horticulture budget by $88,000, and then that negative number is the fiscal year 17-18 costs versus the 18-19 savings. That's correct?
Mm-hmm. Is our contract over with?
Yeah, it's a 1 year.
And it ended already?
Yeah. So it ended at the end of the mowing season. We will, you know, based on the direction that we take from this meeting, we will go back out to bid for mowing. So I have budgeted for an increase in cost of 3%, which I think is reasonable, you know, given the current climate.
Mm-hmm. Second question, is this increase of $32,000 reflected in the budget book that we
got? It is.
That's a good answer. And I guess the comment is, I just wanted to second and build on what Steve said about increasing expectations. I would say that what you said about Berlin Field is absolutely true. We've also had conversations as a board about Everly Wildflower Sanctuary. There was the discussion we had about Woodlawn Park a few weeks ago about, you know, how those things hit an operating budget, right? And it would seem like this is kind of the manifestation of that, if I'm interpreting this correctly.
Sure, and it, I think those increased expectations can really be felt. It's not just a community expectation, but it's a staff expectation of meeting and exceeding an industry standard. And it, you know, it can really compound itself in little things. You know, having new sand every year in the sandbox at the playground. Those are the types of new things that we do that people may not realize we're doing. And those are the little things that I think really make the difference in going from good to great. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you. All right.
Nuts and bolts here.
Now it's your turn here.
Nuts and bolts.
Everybody bring their glasses, a magnifying glass.
Before we move into Carol, are we going to be asked to vote up or approve any of this, or this was really just more for our...
This is a committee meeting, so actually at the end of the meeting, we'll advance the budget.
Right, yeah. So there was just being a praise of this...
Yes.
Segment or change in the budget. Okay.
Which again, as Josh asked, it is included in the numbers for Chris's Parks Department budget. So when in effect you are approving it to move forward, you are approving the position.
And so in the meeting, when we approve the budget, we'll also approve adding a full-time staff to the maintenance department.
Okay.
Which is support.
I wanted to clarify when we were taking that action.
Okay.
Well, as in prior years, it's really just kind of roll up the sleeves and go section by section. We tend to do the big overview, which, to my history, you listen to the overview, you listen to the good direction that I think we're continuing to go as a district. And then we get down into the nuts and bolts as far as you want to go. I have binders of the detail, backup for accounts, and then really get into the capital, I think, is really... really have a lot of questions about that area, and I will defer to Bobby and Chris and to Lisa to help in the discussions. But please just jump out with any questions as we're going through this. I think just starting with Section 1 and the basic premises that we've used, kind of the structure of the budget document itself. Again, this is the overview. This is my memo to you as the board to kind of say, this is what we're looking, this is what we base the budget on. This is what the levy was that we approved in December that kind of drives at least the real estate component of it, and the revenues typically go 50% real estate taxes, 50% user fees. I did give you all a memo, kind of a summary from our auditing firm from really last year's audit. So the audit that we discussed last June, they like to, once the year is done, provide a comparison of how we compare ourselves to other districts. And you can see versus budget, EAV, our fund balance levels, our debt ratios, and I think it looks very positive. So that's kind of a side note of, you know, how we compare to other park districts. But from an overall perspective, yes.
Sorry, I thought I read this carefully, but I didn't see that one.
No, that was the thing. It's right there to the left, Josh.
All right.
And it just gives kind of a colorful pictorial analysis of how we compare to other agencies, some similar in size, some bigger than us, and that we still have pretty good financial outlook, even based on our small size. So just another additional tidbit of information. I think really what it comes down for me is when I put the budget together and I kind of look at, okay, our main goal is to kind of keep our 50% reserves in corporate and recreation to still allow us the opportunity to then divert funds to, divert, maybe that's not the right word, is to devote funds to Fund 69 to help us do those master plan projects that I think we all enjoy talking about and debating about and prioritizing, that are really those things that you can look to in our district that really our residents see and can honestly put their hands on. So I think from a perspective of, yes, this year it also holds true that our operations are again allowing us that opportunity to maintain what our conservative guideline of 50% in fund reserves are, and still look to do some pretty substantial transfers once the audit is done. I never really feel comfortable until it's audited, it's good, the managing partner comes out and shares his findings of the audit, that's when really we'd say, hey, we can take $500,000 from corporate or $800,000 from recreation. You know, that's not unheard of this year based on, again, what our financial picture looks like. So we're still able to do considerable amount. Yes?
One question I did from this report is the debt per capita on the last page.
Yes.
Is that, would you explain that so that I'm not concerned
sure.
that we're significantly higher?
So again, we're a small park district. We have 8,800 people, 9,000 people. When we passed the referendum to do this building, that was pretty considerable. That was a $14 million bond
right.
issue. Mm-hmm. So that's what that is. It's what the, per person, basically what the debt is, the outstanding debt is. So a
there's
lot.
There's light at the end of the tunnel for that with the actions we've taken, so.
Exactly. And so, I mean, that was, again, a referendum. Actually, both of the bond issues, there was a referendum at Watts, and there was
right.
a referendum for the community center. So by that, it's showing overwhelming support for the approval of what you're using the money for. People are going into it knowing that it has to be approved to increase their taxes, and they did it to
yes.
do that.
So if I understand how we fund ourselves, there's specifically taxes on our tax bills to pay for these
Absolutely.
Debt.
Right. So you get your tax bill and you see, and this has been a question I think Dudley, we've talked about, what percentage of our tax bill is the park district? It's really about 7%. But that 7% pie is then further broken down into all of our funds, and one of them is our debt fund.
Mm-hmm.
So right now it's about $1.2 million that we are paying back the bonds that we sold back in 2006 to do this building.
Mm-hmm.
And part of doing that building was, again, to kind of build up the programming and to really kind of the programming fee side of it so that we can have the reserves to then do projects.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really holding true for what we wanted to do back in 2006. And to see the changes in this building has been a wonderful thing to see over the last 10 plus years.
Question, and then that will change, of course, over time.
Absolutely, as
yeah.
we've talked about what's going to come off the tax rolls as far as the Watts debt, that's going to be 2020, we're going to pay that off. So that's the smaller of the two issues. Right now, I want to say our annual debt that we're retiring on that is about $120,000.
Oh.
But if you take that, then you have the ability to roll new debt, and you still keep that consistent to the what the taxpayer sees for their tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
If we didn't do that, then they would notice a decrease
in taxes. There's a blank
taxes.
On the three-year plan that we developed together a few months ago.
Absolutely.
I'd be very interested to know. I think we talked about it at one point, but I can't remember.
Of how much we could issue?
What is that number, mm-hmm. give or take?
It fluctuates now that rates have gone up a little bit more. It's probably less that we could issue. And I think it's right around $3 million. Probably that we could structure out for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
pay it back, and have $3 million to use towards projects out there.
And that has to go through, that would be like on a ballot kind of thing.
No, that's actually non-referendum.
Oh, what's the ceiling again?
That was referendum.
What's the ceiling?
The ceiling that we have is the ability to actually issue for non-referendum debt is like $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one thing that Eric Anderson, who is our kind of bond consultant that helped us in the refunding in 2015 for the
right.
community center, that we saved approximately $750,000 over the last 10 years
right.
of the maturity by reducing the interest rate.
Right.
I would love to have him come out in the next year or two, or year and a half, really, to kind of explain how that works
yeah.
and kind of...
It's been a year.
Yeah. But it is non-referendum debt, meaning that there is not a referendum vote. It's our ability to issue debt to pay for things that, from a capital nature, we feel are necessary.
Right. And it's harder once that comes off.
Correct.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Like, you really don't want the spike,
mm-hmm.
you know, like... You're going to drop and then you're going to go back up again. So you kind of want it consistent. But that is something that I think in the future it would be good to probably bring Eric back to just discuss that. So those are the types of things that we kind of take a look at, broad look at. you know, I'm confident in the fact that, you know, we have $500,000 to do the Fund 65 capital, which are more the ongoing routine maintenance items of all of our facilities and parks, and not like the big projects that we identify from Fund 69. We also do quite a bit of operational capital in our accounts, especially in Chris's department. Typically, that, you know, obviously he's maintaining all of the parks and playgrounds and facilities, but that's a lot. I also were able to budget now $175,000 out of the special recreation fund that we have to seek approval from NSSRA to use that money for ADA-related components to our playgrounds, the parking lot. That's been very helpful in another sources of funds that can be used to pay for those Fund 69 projects,
right,
as well as anything that might come about from the transition ADA transition plan. And I know John McGovern's coming out this month to talk about that. So from that perspective, everything is looking very good. Knock on wood. I think when it comes down to what those two major fund balances are in corporate and rec, we're hitting the 50% and then some. And again, I want to be cautious. I you know, those things that we've talked about in the last year or two that are still out there, hiking the minimum wage, you know, if we're going from $8.25 to $15, could have a huge impact on our programs and on the things that we run, the beach, lots, et cetera, but especially on our recreation programs. And then the property tax freeze, which we did.
Dodged it.
But, you know, where is that? I was actually shocked that we dodged it. So,
come back.
Yeah. So there'll be more discussions, obviously. So that's something that could also have a compounding effect, because once it's frozen for however long they want to do it, it's not just what we lose in that year, it's that what we lose on compounding future years. So those are two things that why I wouldn't want to bring it all the way back down to 50% right away in one full swoop until those things kind of pan out a little bit, you know. And who knows what other political things might come up, you know, that's anybody's guess.
What is your projection that it will be at?
The fund balance levels?
Yeah.
You get to section two, we're looking at like 70 plus percent.
Right.
So, I mean, if you want to go right to that, we could, honestly, in section two.
Does that make sense in the flow of your presentation?
Sure. So right now we're looking at 73 for corporate and 75 for recreation. We are in tab two,
right,
and it's the fund balance summary, table four. And it says fund balance levels as of projected as of the end of next budget year. Okay? So we're looking out not only this year, but then looking at next year and what we're budgeting. And they're pretty healthy fund balance levels. That, if that's the case, I could probably confidently say, you know, 400, 500,000 from corporate.
More than you.
More, right. Which is wonderful, because I think in our Fund 69 analysis, we wanted to be conservative, and we put 300 from both corporate and rec.
But keeping this mindset for the last number of years, mm-hmm, since this building's been finished, mm-hmm, has allowed us to do these great things for the community that we've been doing. So let's continue with all these things, keeping Chris and everybody really busy, but only as long as we're meeting these extremely spectacular goals first. I don't want to sacrifice that.
Steve, I agree with that, but I just want to point also there's a sort of an opportunity cost if we've got a couple million dollars or $1 million basically in cash that's not earning a whole lot.
We're starting to earn more.
But I'd like to continue to sit in the chair as the financial conservative, because every time we have come up with a project that we get excited about, we do have the funds to get there. And we're not.
I'm agreeing with you.
We're right. The opportunity cost, I agree. But we're not being so financially conservative that we don't allow projects with merit to get funded.
Correct.
I like to be the one here that has to really be convinced, and then I'm the one that's the most excited.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I think I'm just seconding what Carol says. That at some point you look at this and you say, and I'm not saying that 73% or 75% is the number, but at some point you look at that and say,
exactly,
we've got so much money just sitting there not doing anything that it's so over and above being cautious.
Yes,
right.
That
yes.
We really ought to either give it back to the taxpayers or spend it on something that benefits the taxpayers.
Yes.
Well, I think, and we're at the 50%, which is a great place to be, and we do have plenty of projects to improve our infrastructure.
Yeah, I can attest to that.
Yeah,
yeah.
That we that that's a great place to be in.
Well,
the 50% is perfect.
You, after the 3 years, you're looking at a $3 million deficit for the big projects, i.e.
Yeah.
Front Park,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
which has
right.
been put on hold.
Yeah.
A new maintenance facility, which has been put on hold. Why?
That's why I said
those
we have a lot of infrastructure improvement we have to do.
Be over and above what are going to be like the regular and routine mm-hmm. Fund 69 projects. They're going to be something where we're going to need maybe the Watts referendum dropping off to kind of look at, okay, what are
and the lakefront project is a combined project for the lakefront park, possibly some bluff remediation and some beach and beach building work. So that's a multi-generational project. That's not something we undertake every, you know, very often.
Well, and I think to Carol's point, I think we're straddling the line of making sure that we're being conservative, but we're not deferring maintenance on our infrastructure that we
yeah.
currently have
right,
right now.
Right.
I think we're being judicious in that.
Yeah.
Which we've learned the hard way.
Yes.
Is
the way to go.
Creates yeah. problems.
The other thing I'd like to add is that there's certain capacity that we have as an organization to deal with these things.
Mm-hmm.
And if we try to bite off too much, things will fall through the cracks. And you know, I think we're doing a pretty good job now. But as you know, I've heard from staff, they're working flat out. If we try to do, for instance, some more parks or something, it's more neighborhood meetings.
I think that's a different discussion.
Else.
We're talking the budget and the fund balance now. So I think anything, any projects we have recommended going forward for this budget year, we feel like we're fully capable of doing, and we would not have advanced those if we did not think we could.
Excellent.
Just think of all the things Chris can do now that he has this extra employee.
Oh.
You're already counting.
Hey,
like, look at that. This is about a 40-minute into it.
Perfect. What you asked for, huh?
Yeah.
Chris, why was there a snowplow order for the front of the Jeep?
We don't have a Jeep.
Lisa's
Jeep. Oh. I think he's trying to make a joke.
It's
so we can
see
so
snowplow.
And my Jeep is not being snowplowed.
4 a.m. snowplower.
Yeah. She gets here at 4 a.m.
I do.
So making sure that we're doing our job.
On snow days, I usually am here by 6,
yeah.
6:30.
Yeah.
Just because I don't like to drive in traffic with the snow.
The staff
but
like
they do a phenomenal
they
job.
Like, they
at,
like to see here early.
Especially our managing partner, Ron Eamon, gave your staff a big kudos and said when he came, everything was cleared off perfectly, and he had been to a...